drop it. All right, a new addition to the power panel, Steph Jimenez. Works at Chris 6 News. She is the evening news anchor there since April 2014. Does the 5 o'clock to 10 o'clock Emmy nominated anchor there. Steph, great to have you here.
Thank you. It's awesome to be here. I've been a long time TYT fan, been watching y'all since 2008.
Wow, we get a y'all out of this. Okay, you can tell she's from Texas. All right, fantastic. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
All right, let me read a couple of quick tweets about the massive Mike Flynn news, and then we'll go on to taxes and everything else. Emily Vandermeulen writes in, looking like the first person he flipped on is Jared. Emily, thanks for writing that in. It's a story we didn't get to with John because we're running short on time. But real quick, it turns out that Flynn might have done this deal earlier and told him information about what he knows about Jared Kushner. Then Mueller talked to Kushner, and if Kushner lied in that conversation with Mueller, then they got him because they already know what Flynn said. And so Kushner might be first up in terms of the next set of charges. Eric Rooney says, I like presidents who aren't about to be impeached. Rita Ann says, I can't see Trump resigning unless the threat of losing money is there. No, Rita Ann, the threat of handcuffs, if any of, like, even if 33% of this plays out, is so real that all of a sudden, oh my God, I think I lost my mind. I can't remember anything. I got to resign. The reason I keep talking about Alzheimer's as the excuse to resign is that way he doesn't have to be let out in handcuffs. Then you can't, and the Republicans aren't going to want to have him imprisoned. He's not going to want to be in prison. And then if he stays and fights, we might have civil war. I mean, his MAGA guys are lunatics.
Well, I'm worried that if he is impeached and he does step down, that we'll still have that problem.
That's why they're going to do a secret deal. They're going to do a deal about, like, oh, golly gee, I guess there was a little bit of collusion and obstruction. Let's leave the Russian financial deal out. You claim Alzheimer's and we're done with this thing, right? That's my belief, but we'll see how that plays out. And then finally, Frank Tortorello? I'm from Jersey, I should be able to say that. Anyway, why none of this shit has taken him down yet is because the Republicans would not do anything until they push his tax shit through. After that, wait for it, bye-bye, Trumpy. And which leads us perfectly to the next story, and exactly what I've said from day one. Mm-hmm. I said the one thing they'll get done is the tax cuts, and then Trump will go.
Yes.
And here we are.
All right, so let's get to it. There are a lot of updates on the Senate version of the tax bill, and I want to make sure you guys know the details. The Senate has tinkered with the original version of the tax bill, and now there are officials saying that the version that they currently have will nail the votes necessary to pass this version. Now, after Republicans resumed negotiations early on Friday with the last few holdouts, Republican Senators Steve Daines, Ron Johnson, and Jeff Flake announced they would back the bill, as did Senators James Lankford and Jerry Moran. Now, another senator to keep in mind is Susan Collins. Based on the reporting that I've seen so far, she seems like she's still kind of wavering, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but they have made some concessions in order to get these senators to agree to vote in favor of the tax bill.
They'll get Susan Collins too. Can I say it now? Oh, all these Republicans that said, oh, they're not so sure about the tax cuts are all actually going to vote for giant tax cuts for the rich. Of course, they are. That's the whole point of being a Republican, is to give tax cuts to the rich. So there was never any question. That's why, look, part of me, of course, understands why the mainstream media has to say, well, Susan Collins is wavering. Ron Johnson says he cares about small business. Because if you're if you're working at Reuters, you can't say Ron Johnson's a liar. Doesn't care about small business. He's definitely going to vote for this tax cut. That's my job. Okay, but I told you from day one, Ron Johnson doesn't give a damn about small business. And at the end, all of them will vote for the tax cut, and they are.
So look, some of them did demand things that it appears they've been promised to get. So you're right, they are shao-shao. But Mitch McConnell says, we have the votes. Sometime today, we will wrap up. And keep in mind that they are really in a rush to pass this through, right? And I had no doubt that there wouldn't be as much difficulty with the tax bill as there was with the repeal and replacement of the Affordable Care Act. This is something that Republicans have always been in favor of, and they didn't have to worry about disagreement as much as they did with the Affordable Care Act. Now let's talk about the concessions. So Daines and Johnson, Senators Daines and Johnson, announced their support for the bill on Friday after winning more tax relief for non-corporate pass-through businesses. These include most American business enterprises, from mom and pop concerns to large financial and real estate organizations. The bill now features a 23% tax deduction for such business owners, up from the original 17.4%. So these small businesses, as you mentioned earlier, will be getting more of a deduction under this bill. But you say it's xiao. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
No, it's actually more tax cuts for the rich. So yes, some of them will go to mom and pop stores and smaller businesses like the Young Turks. Used to be a pass through business, and we would have gotten a benefit out of that in the old days. Okay, but it also applies to really large businesses like Donald Trump's business,
real estate or businesses. Yes.
Yeah, and some of those are gigantic, worth billions of dollars. So the concession they got for small business owners was more tax cuts for a lot of billionaires and millionaires. That's not a concession.
Yeah.
That's okay. I'm going to take more from the middle class and give it to richer people.
No, but you make a great point, because one thing that you should keep in mind as I go through these concessions, they're not concessions to help the little guy. They're concessions to further help, you know, those who are already standing to benefit somewhat from this tax bill. Remember, this is the Senate plan, the same Senate plan that essentially will tax graduate students if their tuition was waived because they agreed to work on campus. They will be taxed on their stipend, which is a very, you know, measly amount of money that students get to live off of. But on top of that, they'll be taxed on their tuition that has been waived. So when they file their taxes, they're gonna have to deal with the gigantic tax bill, which is out of control. And they're not talking about, oh, that's, we can't do that to students who are already grappling with student loan debt that they can never get rid of in bankruptcy. We're talking about concessions that further help, you know, people who are already at an advantage.
And you talk about this a lot on the show.
I care about this a lot.
Of course, yeah. Everybody should, but student loan debt has already surpassed credit card debt. So we already know that it's a big issue in this country. But yeah, I was going over some of the things that aren't discussed directly as it refers to this tax cut. Or this bill, excuse me, it would make it so that, let's just say the House version makes it so that 10% of your gross income, if you spend more than 10% of your gross income on medical expenses, that's you can no longer write that off on your taxes.
Yeah.
So this hurts the sick people. It hurts, also, it triggers cuts to the Medicare program, because the measure requires cuts to the federal program if the deficit increases. And it's been projected that it will increase the deficit. Mm-hmm. So that's gonna happen too.
Steph, let me just jump in there for a second, because that's the one thing that Susan Collins pretends to care about. And she says, well, I don't wanna cut Medicare because I told everybody for years and years that I wouldn't do that. But it does cut Medicare. So what are you gonna do about that, Susan Collins? She's still gonna vote yes, but she said yesterday, it's okay, I got a personal commitment from Mitch McConnell that he wouldn't let that happen years from now. Is the personal commitment in the law? No, it's not. Okay, that personal commitment isn't worth the paper that it's written on, but it's not written on any paper.
And there's also something else. The Senate bill would end the deductibility of state and local taxes entirely, and we know that 7 states don't have a state income tax: Alaska, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming.
Oh, what a coinkydink that those are all red states.
Well, except for Washington, but yes, out of 7 are all red states. The ones that pay the largest state and local taxes are California and New York, the biggest blue states. So it is income redistribution, but it goes from the blue states to the red states. So, and in the case of the pass-through income, it goes from the middle class directly to Donald Trump. So the big concession that Republicans got is, don't worry, Donald Trump and his family, you're going to get an even bigger tax cut. Those are not concessions. The only thing, last thing on the concessions from my point of view, mm-hmm. is that these different senators have different donors. Mm-hmm. Some of them are the same. The banks give money to almost all the Republicans and to a lot of the Democrats. But some of them have specific donors based on their state. There's a particularly rich guy in Wisconsin, there's three rich people in Kansas, etc., that give a giant amount of money to these senators. So they go, okay, no, the tax cut I want is this. So that then they hold up the bill and they go, all right, well, look, man, I'm concerned about people in nursing homes. And then they get a giant tax cut for a guy who runs hospitals in their own state, mm-hmm. who's actually a billionaire, right? So almost all the concessions are for other donors.
You're right, yes. And remember, the Senate is also, look, in order to pay for all these massive tax cuts for the wealthy, they also think about getting rid of certain deductions that, yes, the wealthy take advantage of, but the middle class also gets to take advantage of. So SALT, the state and local taxes that you were mm-hmm. referring to, Steph, are very important for a lot of people in California and New York and some of these states that have state taxes. But also keep in mind that they're thinking about doing away with property tax deductions. Mm-hmm. Again, something that helps incentivize property ownership by the middle class. And so Susan Collins claims that she's concerned about that, but it doesn't seem like she really has a strong or firm opinion on it. First, let's go to Jeff Flake, though, because you mentioned the deficit, Cenk, and Jeff Flake says that he's very concerned about what this plan would do to the deficit. Flake, once one of the firm holdouts because of concerns over this deficit, tweeted he would support the bill after getting, again, assurances from the White House and Senate GOP leaders that they would work on legislation related to DACA, or Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. So he's saying that, hey, we need to do something to protect these individuals. I really care about them. And he's saying, okay, well, now I'm getting assurances and I have flipped in support of this bill.
None of the assurances, as far as I can see, is actually in the legislation. So maybe they'll do something about DACA later. I don't see it. They're thinking of shutting down the whole government because of DACA. So they certainly didn't address it and conclude it in this bill. So it's a lot of BS from Republicans who just want to vote yes for tax cuts for their donors about, oh, I got assurances that many, many years later that somebody will do something. Jeff Flake, you're retiring. When are we going to do anything about this that's relevant to you? So,
When you talk about assurances, what exactly does that mean? So, right. Basically, Mitch McConnell promised that something would be done down the road because politicians are known to keep their word. that's how that works.
Yeah.
Right. Now, going back to Susan Collins, she announced that she would vote yes. Okay, this is one of the reports saying that she would vote yes. The new bill would include her request to allow taxpayers to write off $10,000 in property taxes paid to state and local governments. So that is part of her SALT concerns, and we'll see how that plays out. But I am concerned because, you know, again, there seems to be, in the wording of this legislation, there seems to be an effort to punish liberal states. And I saw some reporting in regard to disaster relief funding and how that relief funding would specifically focus on hurricanes and storms and flooding and exclude or at least cut funding for earthquakes.
I mean,
these types of things matter because there seems to be like this concerted effort by some in Congress, in the Senate specifically, to somehow punish some of these states that tend to be blue states. So,
can I just say, yeah. If we did likewise, if a liberal president and a liberal Congress purposely targeted Alabama and Texas and said, well, if there's flooding in Texas, we're just not going to cover it. But if there's an earthquake in California, we're going to send a lot of money. And by the way, and rejigger the rules as they have here so that Texas pays more money and California pays less money in taxes, there would be holy hell to pay. Right. And they would say, how dare you? These are the real Americans and middle America. And you see the liberals hate them. Why is it okay for the conservatives to hate the people that live in blue state America and punish us and redistribute our wealth? It's not that they mind the redistribution of wealth. They just don't like it when it's to the middle class. They like it when it's redistributing wealth to their donors and to, in some cases, small cases, to their voters. If they could take it from the blue states.
Right. I was having a conversation with a conservative woman on my Facebook page because I talked about how these tax cuts would actually help those who are disadvantaged, would not help those who are disadvantaged and would actually help corporations. And, you know, when it came to the state taxes, she was all for getting rid of that deduction. She lives in Idaho. She's like, yeah, why should these people be able to deduct this in their taxes? And I tried to explain to her, like, I get it, you hate blue states, but do you understand that the federal taxes paid by blue states, tend to be a little higher because they tend to make a little more money, and that gets redistributed to states like Idaho, right? And so I even showed her data showing where the majority of the federal revenue comes from, which is usually some of these, blue states, and the states that actually require the most funding for some of these social programs, states like Mississippi, for instance. And we need to get to a point where we realize we're all in this together, okay? Blue states, red states, doesn't matter. We have to work together and take care of our people instead of wanting to punish one another based on political ideology.
Now, this issue with the hurricanes brings up another interesting point, which is that a lot of the states that will require hurricane relief funding are red states. They're in the South. We're talking about Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, whatever. They usually, whenever there's a hurricane, obviously the infrastructure is destroyed. Well, the infrastructure is already weak because they don't have state taxes, because they don't have enough funding. Mm-hmm. So they're going to require naturally a lot more relief from the federal government,
which is another point to make. Yeah.
Yeah. And look, we're not like those guys. Do we want to take care of people who are in need once there's flooding in Texas? Of course we do, because they're Americans. And we want to look out for one another, and we want to take care of our own. So that's why it's an uneven playing field, because progressives are never going to punish Texas. But when conservatives are in power, they can't wait to punish California and New York. I mean, you remember what Bill O'Reilly said? He said, why don't the terrorists take out Coit Tower in San Francisco? So it's an outrageous, outrageous thing to say. And often they refer to San Francisco and Massachusetts like they're not real Americans. Yes, they are. The person in Alabama is a real American, and so is the guy in Massachusetts and San Francisco. But the conservatives don't care about us as Americans at large. And finally, on the deficit, the Republicans said, no, you guys don't understand. It seems like we're creating a $1.7 trillion hole in deficit. But we're going to get the nonpartisan Joint Committee on Taxation to release a report that shows how much the economy is going to grow. And when it grows, there's going to be less of a deficit. They were right. There was less of a deficit. Did it take away the deficit overall? Even in the rosiest way that they could do this projection? Nope. There's still a $1 trillion deficit from this tax cut plan. So even in under absurd circumstances where the economy is never going to grow that high, but even if you grant them that, it's still a $1 trillion deficit. So for once and for all, Republicans never ever cared about the deficit. It was just a marketing gimmick to make sure the Democrats don't grow the economy when they're in charge.
One thing that I want to say is that you just made a point about how liberals don't usually attack, people from conservative states or whatever. They do, comedians usually dismiss Southerners as hicks and stuff. But as far as people in power, like, you don't hear, Andrew Cuomo, someone from New York, kind of dismissing other, Southerners and stuff like that. It's usually, so I'm just making the point that liberals do that, but not.
Yeah,
liberals in power.
Of course, commentators and comedians are going to say what they're going to say. But I think what differentiates this from what you would see from liberal comedians is that this is policy. They're pushing for policy, something that has real ramifications for people who are Americans, who are paying their taxes, and who shouldn't be punished based on where they live or what their ideology is.
Okay, let's just call it what it is. Okay, who's the guy who makes this sound all the time? Okay, me. Okay, so do I do a Southern accent while making fun of Republicans? Yes. Okay. But if I was in government and somebody said, hey, should we punish the people in Mississippi because they're a red state? Like, of course not. That's preposterous. That's insane. First of all, there's many people in Mississippi. They're not all Republicans. Second of all, I don't want to punish any Republicans. You see, the difference between us, in my mind, between us and the conservatives is, I don't actually want conservative voters to suffer. Mm-hmm. I believe that our proposals will make conservative voters way, way better off, right? Could you imagine if your kids also got to live the American dream because they could actually afford college? Could you imagine if you actually had healthcare and you got sick? I want to cover you. If you're the most conservative guy and you're the God, king of the world, I don't care. I want you to make sure that you don't die, you don't get sick, and if you get sick, that you get covered. And so it's when conservatives say that, they do projection. Because in their mind, they're like, I don't care about those guys. I have no empathy towards them. Whereas for progressives, we have empathy. That's why we actually want to take care of all Americans.
Well, you did see a little something when it came to Hurricane Sandy funding versus Harvey funding.
Exactly.
Right? You had Ted Cruz, who didn't want to vote for the funding for Hurricane Sandy, which hit mostly the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're right.
No, that's because they're bad
but
guys.
But he wanted funding for Harvey.
Yeah. And what did the representatives from the East Coast who got hit by Superstorm Sandy do? They voted for the funding for Hurricane Harvey relief because they're not pricks, unlike Ted Cruz and unfortunately a lot of the Texas legislators in Congress who mainly voted no on Sandy.
All right, well, let's talk about the government shutdown and how Trump might be looking forward to making that happen, which is insane. So the Washington Post has spoken to a number of White House aides who wish to remain anonymous. And based on these conversations with the aides, Trump has told confidants that a government shutdown might actually be good for him because he'll find a way to place the blame on Democrats, even though Democrats do not have control of Congress at all. So Trump has told his confidants that a government shutdown could be good for him politically and is focusing on his hardline immigration stance as a way to win back supporters who are unhappy with his outreach to Democrats this fall. So if you could remember, Trump did have a meeting with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, and it seemed like things were on the up and up and they were getting along. And then later he got a little criticism from the right for negotiating with them. And so now he is trying to respond to that with his hardline policy regarding immigration. Now, in the spring, he tweeted that he would like a good government shutdown and thought it would be useful to him. He tweeted about that. So there's another example of him getting in trouble by his own tweets because he doesn't know how to stop and just shut it. But he changed his tune this fall. He mused to others in the White House meeting that he thought about the debt ceiling, often used as a negotiating point in complex spending talks, should be ended for good and has told advisors that a shutdown could make the administration look impotent. So he goes from thinking it might be good to maybe this isn't a good idea, maybe it's going to make us look bad. He can't make up his mind. And I think my favorite quote was actually from Schumer, where he's like, we're just trying to catch him on a good day because we don't know where he's going to land.
Yeah, that was Dick Durbin, who's in charge of this particular thing for the Democrats. Here, I have it because I thought it was so funny. Durbin said he has a tendency to move back and forth. We hope we catch him at a good moment.
Yeah.
Right? Meaning, because Durbin said right after the inauguration, Trump told Durbin himself, he said, oh, no, we'll take care of those kids, referring to the Dreamers. Like, right. Don't worry, right? And then, and the whole reason for that Nancy Pelosi Chuck Schumer meeting that got so much press with Trump was because they actually do need the Democrats a little bit, to be fair. I'll explain that in a second, to pass a budget. And the deal was, you help us pass the budget, and then we'll make sure that the Dreamers can stay, and then we're not going to deport them, right? So then Trump gets a ton of hate from the right wing, like, oh no, throw all the Dreamers out, why not? And we want our budget, we want everything. Of course, they always want everything, right? So Trump reads that, in other words, Steve Bannon sent it to him, okay? And so then he's like, oh wait, he literally apparently told an advisor, I look like a chump here.
Yeah, that's right.
He's such a child. Like, you didn't realize that it wouldn't play well with your right-wing base to make a deal with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer? Of course it would. If I was in a situation, I'd go, okay, but I'm willing to pay that price because we actually do need to make sure the government doesn't shut down. We do need a budget, and maybe I can get votes in the middle from doing this Dreamer thing. But he doesn't get it. He's like, oh, I don't know, Nancy and Chuck gave me a good deal. And then afterwards, he got good press out of it. And he even called him and said, hey, did you see all the good press we're getting? And then he gets bad press from Breitbart and other places. And he's like, oh my God, it turns out I look like a chump. No, never mind, I'm not doing that deal. We're going to have a good government shutdown.
Yeah. Look, what I think is interesting, though, is his interpretation, Trump's interpretation of things, and how different it is from Republicans. So for instance, based on what these White House aides are telling the press, Trump thinks that he could actually use a government shutdown to his advantage, which is ridiculous because, again, Republicans are charged. You have a Republican president, you have Republicans in charge of Congress. Shutting down or even a partial shutdown of the government hurts a lot of people. That is not good for your poll numbers. But in his mind, I'll just blame it on Democrats. I mean, who knows? He's like a master manipulator. So maybe he'd be able to do that.
It could work. It could work. And I make that point because when you look at the people who support him through thick and thin, what is the one thing that they really want? The wall.
They really want
the wall.
And that's what he's focusing on here.
Do you remember the poll that came out a few weeks ago about his support or how they don't believe the media? They believe not flat out that that the media has an opinion, that we make stuff up.
That we fabricate stories, yes.
So, and these are the people who are going to believe whatever he says.
76%.
That's who he wants to keep.
Quickly going back to that survey, 76% of the Republican Party who was surveyed said, we believe that the media fabricates stories about Trump. 76%.
That's insane. Yeah. All right. So let me agree and disagree with you guys. Trump is not a master manipulator. He's a moron. He keeps flipping because he's a child and doesn't know what he's doing. Oh, do I look good? Oh, no, I look bad. Okay, I'm for this. Oh, I'm for that. Because he's a moron. He has no idea what he's doing. But I do agree with you guys that it could work. And so, because it's, you know, more than the wall stuff, I think that the thing that his voters love most about him is strength. So, like when you poll Pathway to Citizenship, it actually polls really, really well. And even among Republicans, you'd be surprised at how well Pathway to Citizenship polls among Republicans. It's not that they're like, no, I must have an 18-foot wall, etc. They just like him being strong and standing up to people. That's why it could work, because I'm so strong, I'm shutting the government down. Well, whose government is it? It's yours, you clown. Oh, yeah, I know, but I'm shutting it down. Ooh, he looks strong, nice job.
Well, it could also be about who's going to flinch first.
Right? Yes.
In that showdown, and who has a tendency, which party has a tendency to flinch first?
Excellent point. Yeah. And we all know the answer to that. It's the Democrats. And if he gets them to flinch, it'll be so sad.
I think he's going to get them to flinch.
Oh my God, that'll be pathetic.
Because think about it. I mean, him tying this entire shutdown situation to the immigration policy, I think it's really going to work. Because if he says, look, I mean, they're not willing to negotiate with us regarding this issue because of my hardline stance on immigration. I mean, come on. Even people on the left, I'm not saying progressive, but some people on the left are in favor of stronger immigration policy. So he might.
And that is part of what got him elected. So, but look, so let's be fair, by the way. Yes, Republicans control the whole government, but why are we even having a conversation about the Democrats? Because they do have a little bit of leverage here. And so if the Republicans didn't need them at all, they wouldn't need to worry about a government shutdown. So why do the Democrats have leverage? First of all, in the House, there's a bunch of extreme right-wing Republicans who are like, no, I vote no on the budget because it didn't give the rich enough. I'm going to call that freedom. I want more freedom for my donors, right? Uh-huh. And so they're going to vote no on the budget, which then means that even in the House, the Republicans need Democrats to vote yes on their draconian budget, okay, to pass. So then, okay, then they have to get Democratic votes. And in the Senate, the Democrats could filibuster the budget.
Right.
Okay. Now, if you ask me, why would a Democrat agree to this Republican budget? I say no, right? Okay, I'll flip it on you. I'm not going to flinch. I want DACA, and that's not all. I also want to make sure that we protect net neutrality. I'm not an unreasonable Republican. Oh, I want everything to that are my priorities, even though we're in the minority, right? But I would have a list of 2 to 5 things that I want, and I wouldn't say ahead of time, oh, by the way, I'm kidding, I'm just going to take only one. But look at the negotiation by the Democrats to begin with. They only started with DACA. So your only choice is either DACA or nothing, right? You either protect the Dreamers or you get nothing at all, right? That's already a poor negotiation stance. So at the end, you guys might be right. Even though they need the Democrats might vote for a terrible Republican budget, and by the way, put themselves on the hook for that budget and get almost nothing in return. So as foolish as Donald Trump is, his advisors like Steve Bannon telling him, punch the Democrats in the face, you almost certainly get away with it. It might be decent advice.
You know, Trump, though, he does get one thing, instincts, how people feel about things. And along with strength, which is the point that you made, goes what? Protection. And that's what the border symbolizes, protection. We're going to keep the bad guys away, the bad guys that are threatening you, the bad guys that killed Kate Steinle in San Francisco. So that's why I think if he ties that, it's going to work.
We'll see. It is frightening to see. But last thing on this, a lot of the Republicans and the people in the White House don't want him to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think all the reporters get this wrong. So they mean well, but they say, well, I mean, I talked to my sources inside the White House, and they're concerned about the budget not, you know, if the budget isn't passed, then parts of the government will shut down and that'll hurt Americans. They're Republicans. When's the last time they cared about hurting Americans? No, it'll hurt the stock market. And so that's why some of the Republicans are in a panic. Like, wait. If we have a government shutdown, the market goes down. Oh, be careful. That's why you have panic comments like this. When Senator John Cornyn of Texas says, it seems like an abdication of responsibility. Like, don't do it, Donald. Lindsey Graham says, we'd look like crazy people to shut down the government in light of all of our problems. In other words, those guys got the memo from their donors, don't shut it down. This is going to hurt the markets. But Trump, in that case, is too thick-headed to realize it. So it's a combination. It's not a clear win for Trump, even if they do a government shutdown, even if we're right about our speculation about the weakness of Democrats. But if the Democrats hold strong and the markets go down and all the Republican senators start to panic, we actually can win and we can get protection for Dreamers. But that would require the Democrats to stay strong. Mm-hmm. Wish us luck.
All right, we got to take a break. Let's do that. And when we come back, an update on one of the more political trials involving an undocumented immigrant and the outcome of that. And then later on, we will talk about one of the most horrible comments I've ever heard in regard to Philando Castile's girlfriend.
Yeah, and that Kate Steinle case that everybody's talking about today, it has twists in it. It's not nearly as clear cut as people are making it out to be. So let's just come back and discuss that. All right, back on the Young Turks. Heather Campuzano writes in, currently watching TYT Second Hour with Steph from Corpus Christi, Texas. Corpus Christi represent. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for watching from Corpus Christi. Super last thing writes in, any Democrat that votes for this tax bill needs to go. Now look, we talked about two things in the last segment. One is the tax bill and the other is the government shutdown. They are different issues. And right now, to the credit of the Democrats, they are holding strong on that. And no Democrat has said that they're going to vote for the tax bill. We'll see if later Manchin or Dianne Feinstein changes their mind, because they have voted. Feinstein has voted for Bush's tax cuts, so, and she has voted to eliminate the estate tax before. So there's lots of this bill that Feinstein likes. Manchin and some of the other conservatives might also flip. But for now, credit where credit is due, they are not. They're all staying together. And then finally, Michael says, I find it funny that Republicans love to say how they're all about the fundamentals this country was built on, but are now nearing a tax plan where their campaign donors will get representation without taxation. They're going to cut their taxes to the bone and only represent them anyway. So that's a great point. And our members of the day are Elizabeth Lieberton and Matthew Chesser. So thank you. We had a couple of great post games with John Iadarola while Anna was gone.
Did you?
I think we did. Now I'll tell you what the topics were, and I'll be. One was about Harry Potter, another one was about
Star Trek. Robots? Was it about robots?
No, but Star Trek.
Oh, Star Trek. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Got into one of the first times I remember crying.
Oh my god! Sounds like a great post-game show.
Anyways, And there was an excellent edition of Old School this week and Aggressive Progressives. Aggressive Progressives invaded Old School this week. So make sure you check that out if you're a member. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member. All right, what's next, Anna?
All right. The murder trial involving an undocumented immigrant who was charged with shooting and killing Kate Steinle has been acquitted. The man who was charged has been acquitted, which was, to be quite honest with you, a rather shocking verdict. Now, this became a national story after it was referenced by Donald Trump, who was then a candidate, and it led to the comments that he made about Mexican individuals who had come into the United States, referring to them as criminals and rapists. Now, let me give you the rundown of the case and how this verdict came to be. Now, after deliberations that began on November 21st, Garcia Zarate, that was the undocumented immigrant, a Mexican citizen, was found not guilty of murder. Now, I want to stop for a second, because remember, when it comes to a murder trial, there is an incredibly high burden of proof, okay? And it is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. So you have to understand the burden of proof before you kind of dig into why it is that verdicts turn out the way that they do.
Let me just pause there for a second. Now, of course, in all criminal cases, you need beyond a reasonable doubt. But juries take murder, obviously, and rightfully so, a little bit more seriously as well. On top of that, look, if we're going to give this guy life in prison, we got to be absolutely sure. And in a civil trial, you just need a preponderance of the evidence. So the way that they explain it to the jurors in some cases is, if you're 51% sure he did it, then in a civil trial, you vote rule for that guy instead of that person, right? In a criminal case, you have to be 99% sure. And as you're going to see here, sometimes it's a little hard to be 99% sure. Mm-hmm. And these are, of course, rough explanations of how beyond a reasonable doubt works. And in the case of Zarate's lawyer, Matt Gonzalez, he said, of the people criticizing this verdict, you have this quote.
Yeah, I'm going to get to
that. Then I'll save it.
Because I think that his quote was interesting and kind of puts things in perspective. But we'll get to that in just a second. I want to get to his charges first. So as I mentioned, he was charged with murder, but he also had lesser charges, including involuntary manslaughter and assault with a deadly weapon. He was convicted of being a felon in possession of a firearm, which carries a sentence up to 3 years. Now, what happened? How did this case come about? Well, Steinle was shot in the back as she and her father strolled along Pier 14 in San Francisco on July 1st, 2015. Jose Inez Garcia Zarate, who was charged with killing Steinle, had been released from jail, even though federal immigration authorities had sought to detain him. Now, this brought up the issue of so-called sanctuary cities. And you know, no one knew or had heard of sanctuary cities until this case became a national headline. And you know, people think sanctuary cities just mean that the city or the state protects undocumented immigrants, but it actually has to do with a fight over resources, because federal authorities or ICE officials will ask local authorities to detain an individual indefinitely, and that costs money, and sometimes it'll take years for the federal officials to get to that case. And so in sanctuary cities, they're saying, no, we're not going to go ahead and hold someone indefinitely. That drains our resources. We have overcrowded prisons. You guys get the point, or overcrowded jails. Now, on April 15th, 2015, 2.5 months before Steinle's death, Garcia Zarate was released from the San Francisco County Jail, where he was being held on a marijuana charge, despite a request from federal authorities that he be held for a sixth deportation. And that's another thing to keep in mind. He had been deported 5 times previously, and he managed to find a way back into the United States.
He used different names.
Yeah, he used different names. And so, you know, if you want to have a debate or discussion about border security, I think that that's a fair discussion to have in regard to this case. Garcia Zarate signed a confession during a police interrogation, and defense lawyers took issue with its validity and the circumstances under which it was obtained. So this is where the story takes a turn or a twist, because the confession was apparently obtained in a way that calls into question the interrogation methods and whether or not it was a credible confession. So the defense lawyers elicited an admission from police that they lied to Garcia Zarate in order to get a truthful response, telling him that they had recovered the weapon when they had not, and that there was a DNA match that implicated him, which there wasn't at the time. So the interrogators are telling him these things to try to get a confession. They essentially lied to him to get the confession. And
yeah, boy, I got a lot of mixed feelings about this case. Mm-hmm. And some of my opinions here will be progressive and some will be conservative. So First, on the interrogation, don't care that they lied to him. They're allowed to lie to him, and that's prosecution 101. So now, on the other hand, there are a shocking number of false confessions, which when I read the stats on it, I was kind of blown away by. So that gives me a little bit more pause than I used to. And to be fair, I worked at a couple of prosecutors' office, so that's my perspective to some degree. It's just as an intern when I was in law school, and I thought about being a prosecutor. But yes, by law, I want you to be clear on this. You are definitely allowed to lie to people when you're interrogating them to get what we hope is a truthful confession, right? So sometimes it doesn't turn out that way. You remember the Central Park Five confessed, and it turned out they hadn't done it at all. And it's because they were kept under severe conditions and unduly pressured. In this case, that's just lying to them, to me, is not an extreme condition at all. Sanctuary cities. Look, if Republicans say, don't let guys like this go if the federal government wants them, and the federal government in this case had said, hey, San Francisco, don't let them go, we want to come get them, then you have to provide funding to keep them in prison all that time, right? Or in some sort of detention. So right now, everybody say, oh, no, you shouldn't let them go. Okay, are you going to fund it? No, I don't care. Let them deal with it. No, that doesn't make any sense. That's an unfunded mandate. So that is the beginning of the conversation. So if they had funded it, should they keep guys like that in prison? And some progressives will disagree with me, but I think yes, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand, the right wing makes this guy seem like he'd already murdered 17 people, and San Francisco is a sanctuary city. So they're like, let's coddle him and give him a hug on his way out. No, the other offenses were all nonviolent.
Marijuana
and things along those lines. All nonviolent. Now, it doesn't mean they should have let him go. But on the other hand, you got to provide funding, as we discussed. And it makes it seem like Obama and the Democrats were like, let him go, and then have him, they deported him, and then have him come back in. Oh, it's Zarate. Hey, good to see you again. Welcome home. No, he used different names, etc. Now, you want to say that's an argument for the wall? I hear you, brother. Okay, I have other arguments against the wall. But so, and then finally, when you get to reasonable doubt, we haven't gotten into those details yet. But I probably would have convicted him. That's easy to say sitting here and not being on the jury. Mm-hmm. But I understand why they thought there was reasonable doubt, as Anna's going to describe the details in a second.
Right. So, well, first of all, in the confession video, Zarate himself changes his story several times. And so I think that calls into question what's going on. There's also the issue of the weapon itself and whether or not he intended to shoot her or if it got shot accidentally. So let me give you the argument from the defense. And then Steph actually has some really interesting information in regard to the weapon that they found. So the defense said that Garcia Zarate found the gun wrapped in a cloth on the pier and that it discharged accidentally as he held it, with the bullet ricocheting off the concrete before striking Stanley. Now remember, murder means that it's premeditated. It means that that individual intended to shoot and kill someone. And so it is up to the prosecutors to prove that. And so in this case, the weapon found is actually very relevant. And Steph, jump in, because you had some interesting information about that.
Well, the other thing I just wanted to chime in for a moment here and mention this, the jury had a fundamental question to answer, and that was whether this was intentional. And that's why when you have murder or involuntary manslaughter or second degree murder, that's okay. So the issue is the gun here. It's a Sig Sauer P239. It's a semi-automatic pistol. All right, so a forensics expert had testified during this trial that it has no safety switch and the weapon has a trigger that requires just little force to actually pull.
Right.
So that just speaks to the weapon itself. The other issue is that the bullet ricocheted and traveled 80 feet before it hit Stanley. And that's the medical examiner said that the wounds that Stanley had sustained as a result of the shooting are consistent with the bullet ricocheting. In essence, proving that he didn't intend.
Yeah. So let's continue to break it down. So the defense says he saw this gun that was wrapped in a cloth, I think, picked it up, it went off accidentally, and then he threw it in the water afterwards because he was scared by the noise. That part I don't believe at all. I think he threw it in the water because he's like, oh my God, somebody just got shot, and he threw the gun away so that he couldn't have it as evidence. Okay, so that's my outside interpretation. So in terms of murder, that's a clear cut not guilty. I mean, like the conservatives in the press make it seem like this is a guy who had killed many, like it was massively violent guy who likes to come back in the country and kill people, and he went and shot Steinle in the back. No, he, for however he did it, whether he intended to pull the trigger or it was by accident, the trigger got pulled, it ricocheted off and hit her. So that is not intentional murder, no way. On the other hand, I would have convicted him on involuntary manslaughter. I don't care how it ricocheted off. Yeah. Don't pick up the gun. I don't know why you have the gun, and I don't really care. Don't pick it up, and then it won't go off. This is what we talk about with guns all the time. Yes, they do kill people, just like they killed Steinle in this case. So whether he intended to shoot it, but in a different direction, one of the excuses he used was he was trying to shoot at the seals.
Yeah.
That are in the pier. There are a lot of seals in the pier, but shooting at them is not a good thing either. And when you shoot at a seal and it ricochets and hits a person and kills them, that's involuntary manslaughter. So I would have convicted on that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Look, we didn't sit on the jury, so we don't know all the evidence that was presented. So I want to make sure I preface what I'm about to say with that. However, based on what we do know, I do find it surprising that they did not find him guilty of involuntary manslaughter. But you know, again, we didn't hear all the evidence.
Well, one last thing, the jury asked, and this goes partly to what Steph was saying. The jury asked, can we see a gun like that and have a demonstration to see if it does accidentally go off? And the judge said, no, you're not allowed to, okay? So then they must have had reasonable doubt, because they're like, well, we can't tell if it goes off easily or not. My point, if I was in that jury, would have been, who cares? Don't pick up the gun, and if you do, it could go off.
Well,
right?
The other thing is that they couldn't tie him. So that gun was stolen. So they couldn't definitively say, not even the prosecution could argue that he stole that weapon and then left and then shot Steinle. So.
Yeah, and then one final thing I wanted to quickly bring up was Trump's reaction to this. Because remember, this became a very political part of the campaign, and he immediately sounded off on Twitter, which is unsurprising, and said the following: the Kate Steinle killer came back and back over the weakly protected Obama border, always committing crimes and being violent, and yet this info was not used in court. His exoneration is a complete travesty of justice. Build the wall. Okay, I just want to quickly mention how weak Obama was on border security. He spent a considerable amount of funding on border security. In fact, during his first part of his administration, he hired 40,000 individuals to protect the border. So Obama actually did a ton of deportations. He was not weak on border security, but it is a Republican talking point that you hear time and time again.
So again, Trump says in the tweet that this guy was committed many violent acts. That's not true. It doesn't matter. I wouldn't have, you know, if we could have stopped him, everybody, if a border agent knew that it was Zarate and knew that he was deported five times, you think they wouldn't have deported him? That they would have let him in the country? No, they wouldn't have done that. There was no, and in fact, Obama broke the record on deportations when he was president.
They called him the deporter in chief.
The deporter in chief. So this nonsense about the Obama border is ridiculous. Do some people manage to sneak in anyway and commit crimes? Yes, that happens. And by the way, it will also happen under Trump. That doesn't mean it's Trump's border and he's not doing anything.
Right. So we have to take one more break. When we come back, a pretty crazy update regarding sexual harassment in Congress. One lawmaker spent a considerable amount of taxpayer money in order to settle sexual harassment claims. We'll tell you who. So come right back.
Back on the Young Turks, Cenk, Steph, and Anna with you guys. No Way writes in, as much hate as there is for Donald Trump, it's not unlikely that the jury sent the verdict back to spite him. No, that is unlikely. I would hope not. That would be terrible because someone died in that case. And my guess is that the jury didn't, I don't know that they even knew what Trump thought about the Kate Steinle
case. I'm sure
case.
They knew what Trump thought. Everyone knew
Who
what
knows?
Trump thought.
But remember, our system's a little absurd. I mean, we asked them 1,000 times over, you really don't know anything about life, right? They're like, okay, I swear, I've never heard the news before you get into a jury,
that's true,
right?
Maybe.
So anyway, I hope they didn't do that. Okay, what's next?
All right. Politico has discovered that a lawmaker spent $84,000 in taxpayer money in order to settle a case involving a former employee who accused him of sexual harassment and creating a hostile work environment. Now, that lawmaker is Representative Blake Farenthold, who we have talked about in the past because of his appearance in a onesie during a fundraiser. But this story is much more serious. The allegations were brought against him by Lauren Green, who did work for him and then claimed that after complaining about a hostile work environment, she was fired. Now, according to the allegations, Fahrenholt regularly drank to excess, and because of his tendency to flirt, the staffers who accompanied him to Capitol Hill functions would joke that they had to be on redhead patrol to keep him out of trouble. Now, to get back to the money, and then I'll get into more details involving the allegations. The representative used taxpayer money to settle a sexual harassment claim brought by his former spokesperson, the only known sitting member of Congress to have used a little known congressional account to pay an accuser. And he did spend $84,000 in this settlement. So Lauren Green, the Texas Republican's former communications director, sued in December of 2014 over allegations of gender discrimination, sexual harassment, and creating a hostile work environment. When she complained, Green said the congressman improperly fired her. Now, what does Fahrenholt have to say about this? He released a statement saying, "While I 100% support more transparency with respect to claims against members of Congress, I can neither confirm nor deny that settlement involved my office, as the Congressional Accountability Act prohibits me from answering that question."
Okay, I think Fahrenholt's gross in a couple of different ways, and obviously I don't agree with his politics, but he probably can't comment on the case, because if there is an agreement, then both parties cannot comment on it. Now, whether you actually believe him that he is for 100% transparency, that's a different question, right? And in terms of the comments about redhead patrol and he liked to drink, I mean, if we're talking about congressmen who like to drink, a lot of them are going to be in trouble. And so Red Hood Patrol by itself doesn't really necessarily mean much. But there's a lot more to this, right?
Yes.
So let's get into the other details. So, and before we do, one more bit of context. Look, Conyers, people are worried, also did a settlement out of this type of fund, right? And he's a Democrat. And keep in mind that the person who accused Conyers, and there might be several, but one that just came out publicly, is a lifelong Democrat. So they have no political axe to grind here. And Lauren Green, Republican, worked for Republicans, has no political axe to grind here. It doesn't mean you have to believe her 100%, but keep that in mind, right? So it's not like it's this hatchet job from the other party or anything along those lines. Now the actual details.
So Green said another Fahrenholt aide told her that the lawmaker had sexual fantasies and wet dreams about her. She also claimed that he did drink too much and that he told her in February of 2014 that he was, quote, estranged from his wife and had not had sex with her in years. So she's saying that he would, you know, engage in improper and uncomfortable conversations, sexual in nature, with her, and that he created this hostile environment where other male employees in the office would say inappropriate things about her. And that was what she ended up complaining to Fahrenholt about, and she claims that that was what led her to getting fired. So there was another aide who apparently complained about a shirt that she was wearing and said that she should change her shirt because you can see her nipples. And apparently Fahrenholt told the aide that she could show her nipples whenever she wanted to. And he said that to another woman, another female staffer.
Yeah, this becomes much more clear. I mean, you can't go around telling. So the story is that he tells his top aide about how he's having wet dreams and sexual fantasies about this other woman who works for him. And then the aide tells her. No, you can't do that. That's crazy. No, so that's why you have an $84,000 settlement, and that's why this story comes out in the first place.
I just wanted to chime in, and I live in Corpus Christi. He's my congressman, and I've spoken to him many times and interviewed him. And one of the interesting things is that, okay, so we know that this thing cost $84,000, taxpayer money, your money funded this. But he is someone who has repeatedly said, if you're looking to elect a congressman that brings home the bacon, that ain't me. In other words, he says, I don't support pork barrel spending. He's not the type of congressman to add little provisions and bills to specifically benefit his district. But then you have this happen. And it's taxpayer money going for something that he could have, might have done.
So the argument, that, and by the way, the agreement that both Green and Fahrenholz signed indicates that they both agree that they, you know, mediated this and they settled this out of court because it would actually end up costing taxpayers a lot more money if this kind of suit went forward. And so, look, they both signed that, and I'm curious to see, you know, how that all really works out. Like, does taxpayer money really get used to adjudicate cases like this if it did go through a regular lawsuit?
Yeah, so I think the last thing on this is that it's hard to know exactly what happened because most of the details are, I mean, obviously they've got leaks here and they have some sense of what happened. But so I'm not saying you, if you're a Republican, don't necessarily 100% believe Fahrenholz. And I don't know that the interpretation that's put out right now is 100% right. But some of the stuff clearly looks really, really bad. And then you can have your own opinion about how bad it is. And they did settle it for $84,000, so obviously pretty bad, right? Or at least that's what that was, what Fahrenholz's office believed, enough to settle it in that case. But now some people are saying, look, he's got a couple million bucks, Fahrenholz does, right?
He's worth $2.4 million.
Yeah, $2.4 million. So now, for, as Steph was saying, for a guy who's all about protecting taxpayer money, if you thought it was bad enough to settle it for $84,000, really going to put that on the taxpayers? So my point being is you don't have to adjudicate how bad it was. They already decided it was $84,000 worth of bad, right? And why is that? Think about it. That comes out of my pocket. That comes out of your pocket. Some portion of that. It might be a small portion, but it does. We paid for him to be able to get away with that. That just doesn't feel right, man. And I know that it's a fund that other congressmen have also used, and that doesn't feel right either, right? So whether they're Democrats or Republicans, I don't think we should have to pay for their sexual harassment claims.
Agreed.
Well, the other thing is usually when you have somebody that sues over sexual harassment, they claim, you know, what are they usually, when they sue, it's emotional distress or lost wages, if they can't find work. People that work for, that are staff members, they don't make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do they make? In D.C., like what, 50, 55, 60, 84,000?
Yeah.
So that's more than a year's salary for most staffers. So that gives you a sense of what they thought was the severity of
right.
it. Right. Right, excellent point. All right, guys, for the radio audience, we love you guys. We're gonna, we gotta go in just a couple seconds here. For the online audience of TYTnetwork.com, we're gonna come back and do two more stories, including the incredibly racist thing that was said about Philando Castile's girlfriend that we're gonna share with you guys, and an amazing story about lizard people. If you're in part of the radio audience, you could always get the whole show ad-free if you go to TYTnetwork.com/join and become a member, and you get all the extra shows that we talked about. So everybody, we're going to take a quick break here for the online audience and come right back with those two last stories. We'll be back. All right, back on the Young Turks. We've got two more stories for you guys. Casper, go.
All right. Diamond Reynolds, the girlfriend of Philando Castile, who was shot and killed right in front of her, received a large settlement following the shooting. She was shot, he was shot by a cop by the name of Geronimo Yanez. Now, there is an official, a city official in Minnesota who has made comments in regard to what Reynolds is likely to do with that settlement. And some are calling into question the racial tones in his statement. So this is a Rice County official, and here's what he had to say. The St. Anthony City Council voted to pay Reynolds $675,000 for emotional distress and wrongful arrest. The League of Minnesota Cities and the City of Roseville pitched in $125,000. That's where the $800,000 settlement came from. Now, Elysian City Councilman Tom McBroom predicted that money would be spent within 6 months on crack cocaine.
Jesus.
When challenged on why he'd think a woman with no crack-related criminal history would squander her boyfriend's blood money that way, McBroom answered, history. Now, this exchange happened on Twitter, and we have the screenshots to prove it. So there it is. I want you guys to carefully read it because it says she needs to come off county and state aid now that she has some cash. It'll be gone in 6 months on crack cocaine. Later, he completely denied that he even referenced crack cocaine. But that is his tweet. That is what he said. He claimed that people misunderstood his comment about history, explaining he was referring to the universal temptation of spending rather than saving large instant payouts.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's what he was referring to. When I first saw the tweet, I thought, well, okay, let's read more. Maybe he is familiar with this person, and it might be a wildly unfair statement about what she's going to do in the future. But has she been arrested before? Is he the one that arrested her? Does he know that she's on welfare? It turns out he doesn't know her at all.
That's right.
So he just assumes that she's basically on welfare and will spend all the money on crack cocaine. Gee, I wonder why he assumes that. He's like, no, I just assumed that because I assume everybody would spend it on crack cocaine.
No.
Oh, sure you do.
No. Here's more of his statement in reference to people who need help with social programs and things like that. I've seen them come to court. They've lost their children, but they come to court dressed to the nines with Michael Kors purses. Okay, stop for a second. He doesn't know whether or not she's on welfare or anything like that. And just because you lost your child because someone happened to wrongfully shoot and kill them doesn't mean that you're necessarily poor or that you can't afford Michael Kors purses. It's just, it's like this line of thinking that you see over and over again by those on the right. To be frank with you, they don't have a pot to piss in.
Who's they?
Yeah. What are you referring to? Who are you referring to?
I'm sure he means everybody because he's always talking in general terms after he gets caught. So this guy's not just a councilman; he's also a cop. He's mm-hmm. a St. Anthony police officer. Mm. And then you wonder why black people in this country are a little worried that cops might not be fair to them. Look at all the stereotypes in this guy's head. You know, when they come to court, this is how they all act, and they don't have any money, but they spend it on purses, and they don't care about their kids, and takes this woman. Now, remember, not only was her boyfriend killed right in front of her, and he was a beloved employee at a school nearby, by the way, okay, but a bullet barely missed her four-year-old daughter, okay?
Who was in the back seat.
And then the four-year-old daughter was trying to calm the mom down, like, mommy, it's going to be okay. I mean, the video is gut-wrenching.
No, I actually wanted to bring the video back because I want you guys to understand how much of an insult this is to injury. She witnessed her boyfriend getting shot and killed right in front of her. And by the way, the reason why the cop pulled the trigger was because Philando Castile told him, I have a licensed car in the vehicle.
Licensed weapon.
I'm sorry. And at that point, I don't know why it is, but he asked him, and there were videos later to prove this. He wanted to see his ID. He reaches for the ID, and as soon as he does so, the cop goes ahead and shoots him. Anyway, enough of my talking. I want you guys to watch the video to see how incredibly traumatic it is. Warning, it's very graphic.
Stay with me. We got pulled over for a busted tail light in the back. And the police just, he's covered. They killed my boyfriend. He's licensed to carry. He was trying to get out his ID and his wallet out his pocket. And he let the officer know that he had a firearm and he was reaching for his wallet. And the officer just shot him in his arm. We're waiting for a back. I will, sir. No worries. I will.
Fuck.
He just shot his arm off. We got pulled over on Larpiner.
I told him not to reach for it. I told him to get his hand out.
You told him to get his ID, sir, and his driver's license. Oh my God, please don't tell me he's dead. Please don't tell me my boyfriend just went like that.
Just keep your hands where they are, please.
Yes, I will, sir. I'll keep my hands where they are. Please don't tell me this, Lord. Please, Jesus, don't tell me that he's gone. Please don't tell me that he's gone. Please, officer, don't tell me that you just did this to him. You shot four bullets into him, sir. He was just getting his license and registration, sir.
So if you're wondering why she's describing and not getting out of the car, they wouldn't let her out of the car. And they handcuffed her later and stuffed her into a police car after shooting her boyfriend. And for what? Like, did you really think she was a threat? But no. Handcuff everybody. And it took him forever to get Philando Castile medical help, and then he did die. So you want to show video number two?
Honestly, no. It's a continuation of what you just saw.
Okay.
But and the reason why I brought that back is because it doesn't matter what she went through. It doesn't matter that her four-year-old just experienced that. Not only a man getting shot and killed right in front of her, but her own mother getting handcuffed and stuffed in the back of a police car. It doesn't matter that this woman witnessed, her significant other getting shot and killed right in front. None of that matters because in the eyes of certain people, namely this cop and city councilman in Minnesota, she's just, she's a black woman. She's going to spend that money on crack cocaine. I wonder why he chose specifically crack cocaine. I mean, come on. And it's pathetic and it's sad. And that's like what this country has really come to.
But of course now, Trevor Noah always makes this point. It's more offensive now to call someone a racist than to actually be one. So people that are watching this might have, their opinions and say, yeah, Cenk, I agree. But I'm sure that some people will look at you and say, yeah, you always have to bring race into it. When he didn't explicitly say, that she, but he says history. I mean, you can draw the lines here. You understand?
I just wish they would own up to it, right? Because they're so proud of their racism. But then once you call them racist, oh, how dare you? And then they become the special little snowflakes. Just own up to it. It's your identity. It's who you are. You're proud of it. You're so proud of it that you, as a public figure, a public official, feel comfortable enough to write that on social media and then respond to the critics by saying history.
So, but look, I want to be, I want to explain a little bit more fully because, look, there's a reason why they always say they're not racist. Because part of it is because they really believe they are not racist. Now they're completely wrong about that. And in fact, if you're on their side, I'm going to go further about what you think in a second. So I'll get to you in a sec. Okay. But I saw an interview with a guy who was like a grand wizard of the Klan, and he talked about how black people are genetically inferior. And then so the reporter says, so you believe in racism? He's like, no, I'm not racist.
That's a definition.
That's the definition of racism, right? And so if you ask McRoom, I think that he probably would genuinely think, no, I'm not racist. I mean, but now, not on the record, but to his buddies, say, I mean, come on, they're on crack, right?
Those people.
And it doesn't matter. He said it publicly. He said he assumed that she was on welfare, and he assumed that she was gonna spend $800,000 on crack cocaine in 6 months. Later, when asked to justify it, he's like, well, I know that in some of the cities there are problems with crack and opioid abuse. Wait, crack's from a couple of decades ago. There's a huge epidemic of opioid abuse, but why did you pick crack in particular?
Right.
Come on, guys. Anybody who's fair about this knows that it's a racist thing to say, but he's internalized those stereotypes. And so he just thinks that that's a fact about black people. And saying that doesn't make you racist, it just makes you honest about blacks. That's how they view it. But no, that is not fair. You don't know anything about that woman. That is the definition of racism. When you assume something about someone based on their race, and you assume things that are terribly derogatory, right? And so if you're out there and you think, no, what he said is not racist, you don't get it. You are also racist.
Right.
Not this, but look, I'm gonna be super fair to you and say that you probably don't think it's super fair. Okay, but I'm not assuming that you do it in a malicious way. Like, I think internally to myself, I hate black people and I can't wait to say a bad thing about black people. No, you have these stereotypes in your head that you think are true and that you apply to different minorities. So when you're called out on it, you go, what, that's not racist. That's just how things are. No, that is racist. That's the whole point of racism, that you assume derogatory things based on race.
So, and by the way, so let's imagine a world in rose-colored glasses where this had nothing to do with racism. His comments had nothing to do with race whatsoever. Okay, but it's still incredibly bad and disgusting to say this again to a woman who just went through something so terrible and dramatic. She just lost a loved one, right? And so why do you feel like it's okay to say anything negative about her whatsoever, to judge her? Like there's no empathy, no empathy.
See, that's such a great point, because he's an unbearable jerk either way, right? Even if you remove the racism, let's say that it was a poor white woman who just white-watched her white boyfriend get killed, and this jerk cop out of nowhere publicly goes, "I should probably spend it on meth."
Right.
Right? Now, that doesn't have anything to do with race. He just maybe hates poor people. I don't know. Maybe he hates everybody that he that he's supposed to be protecting as members of the community, right?
I just wanted to make a point that this shooting happened in a suburb of St. Paul, Falcon Heights. That's where Philando Castile was shot, and it's an hour. I'm sorry, and the official said this is from Elysian, which is an hour and a half from Falcon Heights, where the shooting happened. And I did some research on the on Elysian, and the, according to the 2010 census, 652 people live there, yeah. And it's 96% white, that town.
Yeah, so at a bare minimum, even if you don't concede the saying that about black people is racist, he's a person who has malicious intent for no reason. Makes me greatly uncomfortable that that guy's a cop anywhere. But all reasonable people see that claim, that comment he made about her, and know exactly what she means.
Someone died.
I know. Yeah.
Like that,
know.
That's sort of lost on everyone whenever you talk
We're
about
so
this.
I mean, I feel like as a country, there's a lack of empathy. I go back to that all the time because you see it everywhere. But more importantly, like we've become so desensitized to death, right? Like think of like for a second, put yourselves in the shoes of anyone who's lost a family member or a loved one in one of these shootings or whatever it is. Like why would you feel the need to further insult them and judge them and put them through hell after they've experienced something like that? Just be an empathetic human being. Just be a human being, you know?
So, and it is particularly troubling when a cop has no empathy towards others.
That he's supposed to protect and serve. All right, let's move on to the final story, lizard people. A man in Washington state was arrested after he was shown waving an AK-47 and a pistol and indicating that he had a conversation with Donald Trump and needed to go after so-called lizard people. These are the same lizard people that some conspiracy theorists talk about on their programs, people like Alex Jones. Now, this 55-year-old man, armed himself with an AK-47 and a pistol over this past weekend and said that it was because of a battle against lizard people. The man told law enforcement that President Trump had spoken to him, called him specifically to warn him about this. Now, the sheriff's department says the man told a deputy that he had, quote, snorted methamphetamine to lose weight and that he was taking prescribed morphine. But he did say the following statement, the meth doesn't make me crazy, man. The lizard people are real.
But to be fair to him, the Alpha Dragon had taken his family hostage. So
he said that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I learned something today because I don't watch those programs. I didn't know that the lizard people had alpha dragons. Okay, so now we know that. And so I'm going to be on the lookout for that. I don't know if they have beta dragons or cuck dragons. I don't know. Okay, but apparently they have alpha dragons.
So this is terrifying because it's like, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just wanted to quickly say that this story, it seems like it's just a joke, but it touches on so many societal issues, the dangerous cocktail of some of the biggest societal issues. So first of all, lack of mental health care, okay? The fact that that guns are easily accessible, guns like AK-47s are easily accessible to people who have mental health issues. And three, the fact that we have people parading around as journalists or members of the media who in reality are crazy conspiracy theorists and push insane ideas like the fact that, or the notion that there are lizard people among us. Dangerous cocktail here.
Remember also, there are people who are 80% gorilla, 80% pig, and 80% people, and they do very poor math.
Yeah, I was gonna say that doesn't make sense, but okay.
Don't take it up with me, take it up with Alex. And remember, Donald Trump went on Alex Jones' show and talked about what a great show it was.
What a great guy he is, yeah.
And there's now reports out that Donald Trump has gone back to conspiracy theories about Obama's birth certificate, and he still hasn't let that go. The president is a psychotic conspiracy theorist. Mm-hmm. So I'm not, are you positive that Trump doesn't believe in lizard people? I don't know what Trump believes at all. He believes in, he thought, or at least he charged publicly, that Ted Cruz's dad had killed JFK. I mean, is that really that much less crazy than lizard people? Yes, but still.
So let's talk about the common signs of lizard people. So the Atlantic did some research and compiled a list of things that you might want to be on the lookout for if you suspect anybody that you know or love of being a lizard person.
Oh, thanks God.
Okay. Oh, please. So please just take notes.
I need to arm myself with this information.
A predominance of green or hazel eyes, Anna, that change color like a chameleon, but also blue eyes. True red or reddish hair, low blood pressure, UFO connections, love of science.
Love of science?
Science?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's the greatest irony. I love that. That's hilarious.
You know those scientists, those green-eyed devils.
Yeah. Okay, I appear to be in the clear, okay?
Yeah, you're good.
I'm nowhere near green or blue eyes. I got great blood pressure.
Listen, the audience can attest to the fact that I am not good at science reporting.
That's true.
I have the green eyes, but I'm good too.
And as far as we know, we're not connected to UFOs. But that's what lizard people would say, wouldn't it?
Oh, no.
Yeah, which lizard person raises their hand and goes, oh yeah, I'm connected to a UFO? It'd be kind of a giveaway, right? But a lot of people actually do believe this.
Yes.
And that's what's so sad. And last funny thing and serious thing, I love his theory that, oh no, I was taking the meth to lose weight. Like, oh, I didn't know that. Okay, that's fine. Well, then that's okay.
It will help him lose weight, to be fair. He's right about that.
And make him paranoid.
Yeah, it'll also help him lose teeth and lose his mind. So the final serious point is to double down on what Anna said. Look, guys, if we have a country where anybody can get a gun at almost any time in any way, there is a certain percentage of the country that is mentally ill. There's a certain percentage of the country that's on meth. There's a certain percentage of the country that watches Alex Jones, right? You put all those percentages together, and sometimes in the same guy, you're going to have a lot of shootings. So thank God the cops did a great job here and got him before he shot anyone. But if he thought that the Grand Dragon Lizard had his family hostage, what wouldn't he do armed with all those weapons?
Right.
And look, these are not small numbers. Even if 0.5% of the country was, you know, had mental issues, that's what are we talking about? 1.5 million people, okay? More than that, right? If 0.5% of the country thinks that there are lizard people, and unfortunately, that might be a low estimate. That's another 1.5 million. How many millions are on meth? Right, and get paranoid. They can all access guns immediately. The massacres are never going to end unless we get control of the gun situation in this country and do reasonable, sane gun legislation.
The other thing is that the theory here when it comes to lizard people is that they work for the government. So what do you think will happen? In other words, if these are people who are paranoid that we're being targeted and that aliens are working for the government, I mean, who's the government? What's the government? Police?
Yeah, and
politicians?
That's exactly right. And then they turn around and say, oh, Black Lives Matter once had a chant in one city that was inappropriate and hence cops are in danger. You've got people in the right wing who are convinced cops are lizard people and they should have armor-piercing bullets to fight against those guys. This guy had, 172 rounds on him. Thank God that he didn't, when the cops came up to him, that he didn't start shooting right away.
Absolutely.
Thinking that they were lizard people. Okay, sorry that took a dark turn at the end, but that's the reality of this country. And there's guys driving around right now with a lot of weapons, and God knows what they're thinking. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, we need you to have an excellent weekend. Steph, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for watching. Thank you for having me.
And if you're in Corpus Christi, obviously you got to watch her on Chris.
Yes.
Do we say Chris or do we say?
Yeah, you could say KRIS, Chris, Channel 6, yeah.
Okay, all right. 5 o'clock, 10 o'clock, Emmy nominated. So thank you. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. Likewise.
All right, here we go.
Bye-bye.